Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to How to Eat to Save the Planet, the podcast that takes a comprehensive look at sustainable food production from field to fork. I'm Julie Smith and I'm looking at how we can learn from the past to reduce our carbon footprint on the way we eat by learning some of the granny skills that have got lost in our shrink-wrapped, consumption-heavy, busy-brained lives. This week, a vision of a post-corona future in which we've all learned how to eat to save the planet, ethically, hyperlocally, with zero waste, with an example already happening across the country.
It's such a fantastic crop, puts fertility into the soil, it's a great crop, wonderful for farming. Farmers keep growing it, even though we stopped eating it a few hundred years ago.
A lot of the compost trays that the microgreens come in, we take to our allotment. A lot of our food is going to come from there this year.
Less but better, but much less, yeah. And much better.
Recorded in Bristol just days before Britain went into lockdown, this is a story of resilience, of making do with what we've got, and then seriously upping our game. Food is much more than what's on the plate for a growing band of eco-chefs across the world who look at the whole story behind their ingredients, and we'll meet a couple of them later. Chef and author Tom Hunt, whose restaurant Poker Tapas won the Sustainable Restaurant Association Business of the Year in 2016 and 2018 for its superior sourcing, and his head chef Ian Clark, who's cooking me up a great British feast for dinner, based around Hodmadod's British-grown pulses. But first, we meet one of Hodmadod's three founders, Nick Saltmarsh at Poker Tapas, who told me why they decided to bring back a British bean that's been around for a very, very long time.
The three of us who founded Hodmadod's, we worked together previously for an organisation that supported local and sustainable food. And about 10 years ago or so, a community group in Norwich, the Transition Town Group, asked us to help them to understand if it would be possible, theoretically, for a city like Norwich to feed itself from its agricultural hinterland. And we looked at the figures of production and what people eat and how to get the right balance of nutrients in your diet and what sort of foods could achieve that. And we essentially discovered that, yes, you could, in theory, feed a city like Norwich from the farmland that surrounds it, but we would need to make some changes to our diet. And one of the most effective changes is just to get more of our protein from plant-based ingredients, from, well, particularly pulses, but other arable crops.
Which, of course, was nothing new to the British diet, but we'd kind of lost our way for a very long time.
Well, that's exactly what we discovered, because we started thinking about how we could produce some sort of source of vegetable protein, some pulse, a chickpea, a lentil, or some other bean or pea in the area around Norwich to be the source of protein for this hypothetical diet. And then we suddenly realised that there were beans being grown all around Norwich anyway, the fava bean, grown widely across Norfolk, across the rest of East Anglia and across the whole of the UK, but we don't eat them here. And when we looked into it, we realised that we used to eat them. They're one of the first farmed crops brought here by Iron Age farmers. They used to be a central part of our diet, one of the main sources of protein, an ideal crop that can be harvested once a year, stored dry through the year, and gives you that year-round source of protein in dishes like pottage, which we would have eaten for thousands of years until we started to get richer as a country and turned away from beans and started to eat a lot more meat and dairy and get our protein there.
Pease pottage, also known as pease pudding or pease porridge, is a savoury pudding particularly popular in the Tudor period. It involved boiling legumes, usually split yellow peas, with water, salt and spices, and was often cooked with a bacon or ham joint.
So is that it? So all those split peas that we would use to naturally nourish ourselves and which we will have to turn back to when we are all isolated in our homes, keeping corona at bay, all those pulses, all those staples, our grandmothers used all the time.
Yes, and what happened was they became stigmatised as the food of the poor, because the only people who had to keep eating dried beans, dried peas, were those who were too poor to afford a lot of meat in their diet, so they needed the beans for the protein. Yeah. Once the beans became stigmatised as the food of the poor, people didn't want to be seen eating them, and you can just see that cookery books barely mention them. You go back centuries and go back far enough and they're mentioned, but then they suddenly drop out of the history because they're just not considered an ingredient for a wealthy person. They're not considered a high status ingredient.
And the wonderful irony, of course, is that peasant food that is so expensive now is the stuff that we absolutely idolise. You know, the cassoulet of France, the lentils of Italy. That is poor people's food.
Absolutely. And in other parts of the world, they've held on to that as a more deeply embedded part of their culture.
But we've fetishised it.
But what's fantastic is that we are rediscovering these ingredients that were stigmatised, not because they're not great foods, just because of their status and where they fitted into the hierarchy.
It's extraordinary. What we're talking about, let's just, you know, because people will think, well, chickpea, where does it grow? It grows in those little beans that we see coming up in shoots. It's like, we know runner beans, we know broad beans, we see these in our gardens. They're the little pods, aren't they?
Absolutely. So we're all pretty familiar with peas, certainly, and we know that peas grow in pods. But all pulses, whether they're beans, peas, chickpeas, lentils, adduki beans, there's a whole range of pulses that are all leguminous plants that produce their seeds in pods. And when we stopped eating them dry, which is a pulse is the dried seed of one of these plants, when we stopped eating them dry, we turned to the fresh, immature fruit of these plants as a sort of luxury vegetable. So we started to eat fresh peas and fresh broad beans and fresh runner beans and French beans as well. But the way they would always have been eaten, where they have the most nutrition and also, I would argue, the most flavour, is when they're left to fully mature and ripen and dry before they're harvested. And then we then get this fantastic variety of dried pulses that can be used in all sorts of different dishes, and they're used all around the world.
Chef, food writer and new presenter of BBC's Ready Steady Cook, Romy Gill, is a champion of Hodmadod pulses. Her red lentil dal is a simple recipe from her book Zaika. Soak a pan of red lentils in cold water for 10 minutes before bringing them to a boil with turmeric and salt and cook over a medium heat for 40 minutes. Meanwhile, make the tadka. Sizzle nigella seeds in sunflower oil, add grated ginger, garlic, chopped green chilies, tomato puree, ground coriander and fresh coriander and mix together. Once the lentils are cooked, add the tadka and cook for another 2 minutes. Serve with more nigella seeds.
It's curious that we've become more familiar both with dishes from other cultures that use pulses, like dal, but also with pulses from other parts of the world. And coming back to the fava bean that farmers grow, because it's such a fantastic crop, puts fertility into the soil, it's a great crop, wonderful for farming. Farmers keep growing it, even though we stopped eating it a few hundred years ago, and now we send all our best beans to the Middle East, where they're widely appreciated.
Mad. Absolutely mad, isn't it? Quinoa is another one of yours.
Yes, so we started with pulses. We started with the fava bean. But then, and our aim when we started Hodmadod was primarily just to get British-grown fava beans back into British kitchens, because we thought this is a fantastic British crop. It's got everything going for it in terms of flavour, versatility, health, nutrition and sustainability as well. Really good for the environment. That was our initial aim, but we soon realised from talking to farmers and looking at the crops that are being grown and crops that might be grown, that there's a far bigger opportunity to bring a greater diversity of crops from arable farming back into our kitchens, and thereby increase both the diversity of farming, which has huge benefits, and the diversity of our diets, and also to bring provenance to that type of ingredient, the sort of larder, dry goods, which have often been forgotten when we think about provenance. We think about local meat and local vegetables and so on, but we very rarely think about where the chickpeas in our pantry come from, or where the rice comes from, or how it's grown, or even what it looks like when it's growing.
And adding new crops into British farms means bringing back the traditional mixed farming that's so essential to our soil.
if we can bring more diversity both into farms and into our diets, then there are huge benefits. And on farms, that means avoiding the build-up of pests that love monocultures, and they love the same crop being grown year after year because they can just multiply on that crop and then cause more and more problems. If we're growing,
which requires more and more pesticides.
Absolutely, you've just got to,
which depletes the soil,
put more and more onto the land to try and fight the problem. If you're growing a greater diversity of crops, all of this helps to increase agricultural biodiversity, the natural biodiversity, and just make farming more sustainable and, we hope, more viable as well.
You're getting a lot of people asking for pulses. They're stockpiling because of the corona crisis.
Yes, it's a strange thing that suddenly we're thinking about food differently, and I guess the threat of coronavirus and the uncertainty is raising thoughts about food security. How are we going to feed ourselves if there is significant disruption? And we are seeing a lot of people coming to us and suddenly buying pulses, and a lot more pulses than they've bought before, because if food supply is going to be disrupted, these are the sorts of ingredients that are very dependable. And going back hundreds of years to our ancestors who started growing those fava beans because they could be stored year round, that was providing food security back then. You have a crop that can be stored, and pulses can be stored almost indefinitely. They're always best if they're eaten in the year after harvest, but you can keep them almost indefinitely, so you can have a store of pulses and then be confident of never going hungry.
Yeah, there are infinite things that you can do with pulses, of course.
Absolutely, and we talked about dal, and I just mentioned the British Dal Festival, which is something we've helped to create to really tap into that strange situation where we're now more familiar with dal than we are with our own traditional pulse dishes.
Yeah.
And the British Dal Festival is an initiative which seeks to celebrate dal and the pulses that go into dal, but also through that to raise awareness generally of the variety of dishes, the equivalents of dal all across the world and on our own country, and the pulses that are grown all around the world to use in those different traditional cuisines.
Yeah. Going back to that vision that you were given by Transition Town, do you think it is a vision that could actually come true? Could Norfolk feed itself?
I think theoretically, but from where we are now, it would require a huge change. And with arable crops, working at the most local level is incredibly challenging. We've lost a lot of our local infrastructure, which is simply the machinery need to clean crops when they're harvested and then to process them, even minimal processing like splitting peas or flaking cereals or milling cereals. We've lost a lot of that locally. You've got to balance the production of a farm with the available market. And if a farm grows, say, 20 acres of beans, they might produce 30 tonnes or so. We've got to change people's diets significantly if we're going to sell those 30 tonnes very locally. So we started Homodod with the vision of taking a step towards that more hyper-local possible future by focusing on national production, British production of pulses, and really bringing the grains and seeds into our kitchens, where recently they've been largely imported and also largely anonymous. We want to let people know where they come from and who's grown them.
And it's people like Tom Hunt and Ian here at Poca Tapas who can bring that message. Melissa Hemsley, I see, who's part of the How to Eat Save the Planet series. I see that, you know, her book is on all over your website. It's things like that. It's the association with the people that we begin to know. It's telling a different kind of story that raises the profile, makes it cool. I hate to say it, but it is. I mean, you know, hyperlocal and eating out at cool places like Poca Tapas helps, doesn't it?
It really does. So Melissa Hemsley, I think, first got really excited about our British grown quinoa, and has since been a great supporter of our whole range of beans, peas, seeds and other crops. And we were really excited to see her new cookbook with a fantastic focus on those sorts of ingredients. And Keris Matthews as well, who has also just published a new book and is also focusing very much on a plant-based diet and the use of pulses as a central part of that. Very soon after we started Homodods, we had a phone call from Gelf Alderson, who was one of the chefs at River Cottage. He's now the head chef at River Cottage. And they had heard about what we were doing to get British-grown pulses back into kitchens and were just really excited at the prospect of moving all their pulses with their real focus on provenance and British production, moving them to British growth pulses. And they've been great supporters of ours from the outset. We've also got a number of chefs in other restaurants using our pulses, our grains and our seeds. Chantelle Nicholson at Treadwell's in London is really showing how a restaurant can provide food that is primarily about the plants, not exclusively, but primarily, and making fantastic use of our ingredients in that way and putting them at the centre of the menu. Among other chefs using our ingredients is Henrietta Inman at 26 Grains, David Bez at the Plant Hub, I think it's called, in Hackney, Nicola Horden at Darsham Nurseries in Suffolk, doing fantastic things with our pulses and other ingredients. Another chef who is a great supporter of our pulses is Romy Gill, who has been involved in the British Style Festival and loves using our pulses in her plant-based Indian cooking and does amazing things with them.
And I'd love to see her do it on Ready Steady Cook as well, which she's just started presenting.
Absolutely, yeah, I hope that day will come. Cyrus Todiwala is another chef who I think has used our pulses, our peas on Ready Steady Cook in the past, and also is a great supporter of the British Style Festival. The support of chefs and food writers who recognise what we're doing and then help us to get the message across and also show what fantastic dishes can be created with our ingredients, that is really important, and I think it helps to change our food culture by trailblazing the use of different ingredients and changing the balance of ingredients in our meals. And I think over the last few years we've really seen a lot of chefs take on board the sustainability issues and the need to address the sustainability of our food really seriously and really help to communicate that more widely.
Yeah, and that they create safe spaces where we rely on them to do all the sourcing for us, and we know that we're going to get the most ethical, the least food miles, the most sustainable produce in a really fun environment.
Yes, they know about food, so it makes sense for them to help people more generally to identify what's good food, not just in terms of good to eat, but also in terms of good in the way it's produced and good for the planet and good for ourselves as well, in for our health and nutrition. And I think chefs are just increasingly taking that role more and more seriously and really helping to get the message out about the wonderful foods we could be eating, but we're not.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Tom Hunt is the eco-chef behind Poke Tapas and also the author of Eating for Pleasure, People and the Planet. I asked him about his manifesto for a more sustainable approach to restaurant food.
Okay, well, at the restaurant, for a number of years, we've been planning to improve our kind of meat philosophy and really set an exemplary standard. through only using carbon, well, hopefully carbon zero meat. So trying to source wild foods that need to be culled, like muntjac venison and squirrel and things like that. We haven't got any squirrel on the menu at the moment,
pigeon.
But it's something we might put on. Pigeon,
yeah.
From the rivers, you could be choosing to use something like red signal crayfish, which again are a pest that need to be culled because their numbers are just growing mm-hmm. exponentially and mm-hmm. not only destroying the riverbanks but eating our native species.
Yeah.
What else? I mean, ex-dairy herd cattle,
food,
wild boar.
Meat that would otherwise...
Truly wild boar. Yeah. Often the wild boar that you get sold from butchers isn't actually wild, it's just the species.
Yeah. So meat that would otherwise be wasted or is a pest in some way is not being utilised by the natural order of things.
Yeah, or even those cuts that do end up just getting rendered down quite often.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen butchers throw... And sorry, butchers, lamb belly into the rendering bins and things like that. So it's really, you know, like chefs have been harking on for the last kind of 20, 30 years from St. John and Fergus and Hugh Fernley Whittingstall and everyone else. You know, it's really, they got it right. And you know, through working with Hugh at River Cottage in 2003 and 4 or 5, around that time, kind of, I feel like, kind of what he was doing then really was the kind of the beginnings of what we're seeing now in terms of the sustainability movement.
Yes. Less but better.
Less but better, but much less.
Yeah.
And much better.
How important is it to you that you use UK British grown pulses?
If we can think about not only eating more plants, but eating plants that have been grown either... Well, in the UK, but certainly using better farming methods, and that's what's really most important here is the method of farming, and that means farming that helps improve soil, uses less or no fertilizers and pesticides because of those practices that really support a better ecology and ecosystem around the farm itself. Plants are always going to be a better choice, no matter which food system you're picking from, the conventional food system or the organic food system, in terms of their carbon emissions and impact on the environment generally. I mean, sustainability has to look in a holistic way at the whole food system, and of course eating too many avocados in the UK has bumped up prices in Kenya and Mexico and made a staple food less affordable for local people, and that's another issue.
As a chef, how hard was it to actually become vegetarian when your restaurant serves meat?
It was a really important decision for me as a chef, and before I became vegetarian, I was considering killing meat to eat, so only eating meat that I'd killed, like Louise Gray, who actually wrote a book on the subject. And the reason for that was I kind of felt like I'm, you know, going around talking about how we need to reconnect with the origin of our food, yet I'm eating meat when I really don't like killing animals and or eating them unnecessarily. And I also found myself eating poor quality meat on occasion, even though I cared, because, you know, you're out and you want a sandwich or whatever, and it's really hard to find good quality meat a lot of the time. I think 96% of the meat in the UK sold is factory farmed. So that kind of really brings it home, doesn't it, in terms of like the quality meat that is out there is such a kind of minute amount of the total food sold.
Yeah, but I would never eat a rubbish meat sandwich. I do eat meat. I've eaten it very rarely. But when I eat it, I absolutely know where it comes from, and I absolutely know that is the highest welfare that can be. But, you know, in 2020, you know, you can find amazing sandwiches on the run. What actually made you give up? All that tasting, all that creativity that you have to do in a restaurant, unless you are going to be a completely vegetarian restaurant, which you're not. What's the thinking?
Ian Clark, who you're also talking to, is our chef. He tastes the meat, he creates the dishes. And I still write recipes for meat because I believe, well, as I said earlier, I'm an advocate for good animal agriculture. And so I think, considering the work that I do and the knowledge I have around farming and food, it's important for me to write those recipes. And so in my Guardian column, I do often kind of choose those odds and ends. I've done a recipe for lamb belly and things like that. And I mean, cooking for 20 years, I feel like I intuitively know how something's going to taste. Yeah. And then I can work with my friends or partner if I'm tasting it and cooking recipes at home to taste them and kind of if they need any sort of fine tuning. But yeah, I mean, it was a big decision, but it's also a very personal one. And yes, I mean, it's impressive that you can yourself, you can avoid those kind of cheaper cuts of meat. But for me, I'm a bit all or nothing, and I kind of like had to do that in order to kind of cut it out.
Ian Clark is the head chef at Poco Tapas and is preparing one of the dishes that I'll be having later that evening.
What we're going to cook for you tonight is that it's a dish which has been on our menu for a couple of weeks now. So it's locally sourced pheasant, which is byproducts from the local shoots we have around here. That's with the lovely olive green lentils from Hodmadod's, locally sourced mushrooms, quinoa cracker. We've got dried pear, pickled pear, and we're going to use a mushroom stock going into these lentils to really absorb a lovely mushroom umami flavour.
Now, Tom is famously the chef who turned vegetarian.
Yes.
He leaves you to do all the fancy stuff with the meat
now.
He
does, currently.
But that's not to say that you don't know what to do with a plant-based dish.
No. I mean, I'd say I've looked through his books to get a couple of ideas now and again. It opens your mind, I think, to being quite creative with plant-based food. And there's so much out there, and you can, like, you know, you've got to keep it biodiverse as well. It's like, you know.
So how would you flavour those lentils, for example?
So
without using any meat stocks?
Mushroom stock. I dry my own mushrooms out, shiitake mushrooms, braise them in that.
Super anti-coronavirus.
Who knew? Yeah, amazing.
According to several epidemiological studies, Japanese mushrooms such as shiitake, maitake and enikotake are packed with lentinin, which stimulates the immune system.
And then just injecting it with a lot of herbs if you want at the end. But I ideally would go mushroom stock. So much flavour in it. Much flavour. And the lentils have got a lovely nutty sort of flavour to them as well, which is fantastic.
So it's all about sourcing the best products possible and then working up the flavour using the umami of something like a mushroom as well. You get that extra hit.
Yeah.
I noticed that you've got Grow Bristol trays all around. Tell me about that.
So Grow Bristol, an urban farm, growing microgreens, basically. And I can actually see their grow lights of an evening just over the other side of the road, so it's fantastic, you know, it's to keep that carbon footprint down to a minimum. And it's just that, you know, it's good healthy eating at the end of the day, you know, keep the bugs away is what good plant-based food is all about, really.
Absolutely. And then you plough that back into the ground, don't you? You weigh your waste and you recycle or upcycle 90% of that.
We do, even like a lot of the compost trays that the microgreens come in, we take to our allotment and it goes into our soil at the allotment, and a lot of our food is going to come from there this year.
This kind of circular economy from composting is becoming popular with chefs across British cities. In London, Indie Ecology collects food waste for more than 80 top restaurants in the capital, including Michelin-starred The Ledbury, Michelle Ruse Le Gavroche and Robin Gill's The Dairy and Sorella. Based on the Japanese bokashi method, the process uses pesticide-free fermented molasses to turn high-end leftovers into compost on a 10-acre farm in West Sussex, where the chefs then rent plots to grow their vegetables.
You've had the Sustainable Restaurant Award 2 years running for these kind of initiatives. I'm just wondering how realistic it is to expect, you know, 90% of the country's restaurants to follow your example.
I think it's very realistic. It's just just having the time to research it and just do it properly. This was already started before I came here, so I can imagine, you know, the research that did go into it to get this up and running right at the beginning of the POCO would have been quite detailed.
Yeah.
But once you got it going, I believe, you know, all the hard work's done, and a lot of restaurants should follow suit in that, which I believe that is happening, but probably a lot slower than we would like.
Could you say that the Grow Bristol microgreens are more delicious because of the circular economy compost soil that they grew in? Can we stretch it that far?
I mean, you can try one. I mean, that's a nastertium you've got there.
I mean, that is a potently peppery nastertium.
They are crazy, aren't they?
And
I mean, the whole range is unbelievable. I mean, all the compost is from Bristol Green Waste, and then it goes just on the outskirts of Bristol and then comes back to the centre of the, you know, to the farm. Yeah, right. It's a fantastic product.
Well, I'm coming back here later for dinner. I can't wait. I'm going to have that dish. Thank you very much indeed.
Awesome. Thank you.
And it was sensational. A sharing menu of smoked squash calabaza, squash seed dukkha, and heritage beetroot with smoked walnut and hodmadod quinoa cracker, all sourced from British farms. It was my last supper. Well, out at least. Only a week later, restaurants are already facing an uncertain future as the coronavirus forces the country into lockdown. But we have seen the future. Over the next few months, we'll all be forced to think about food waste and localism as we hunker down and sit this out. In these extraordinary days, let's learn how to be resilient, to respect the land, and connect once again with the source of our food as we eat to save the planet. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Acast for hosting. If you like this podcast, hit subscribe, add it to your favourites, leave a comment, and share wherever you can.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.